Maybe we should have stayed with the Alabama sex clams thing. It looks like that, those dodges are lucrative and lead to things.
It's showtime.
And yes, it is. It is the second day of December, 2021. This is the Horn. Head on .live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you pop by right this very instant, now that the program is live, you'll be greeted by, wait a minute, Squeaky and me. And I am, at least for the time being, your moderator. Oh, well. But hi, Squeaky, and I'm sure Squeaky would love to have some company, so do come on by if you feel so inclined. Of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, consequently, we send out thanks to our second day of the month subscribers, and that means thanks going out to to Rocco. Thank you, Rocco. And thank you to Elizabeth. Thanks as well to Gary. Thank you, Gary. And thank you to Ralphs. Thank you all for being, and thank you, of course, to Max. Thank you, Max. Thank you tremendously. And thanks to Chris in Germany for her portion of Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you again. So we've got a $300 fundraising goal per usual, and given the nature of the deficit from last month, we're just going to add that in, and we'll call it $1,500 to come even with last November and this evening. So that's kind of where we need to get to, so that every day gets me a little closer to home, and God, I can't wait to be back in the regular home studio. But at this point in time, we've still got to deal with most of December and keep the bills paid up there and keep the bills paid down here. And yesterday, it really is interesting to note, to watch how this all plays out. Got almost a three-hour program in last night. And that was really exciting. But yesterday was a rough day, insofar as the procedure I had took a toll on me, and it's still taking one today. I think there's a bit of irritation that goes with having that done, and I don't know how long it takes before it resolves. But it certainly does sap one's energy. So we'll get as far as we can get into the program this evening and see where that takes us. It is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and God, we have an abundance of thorns. At the top of the list, something that our buddy John in Central PA mentioned to me in an email earlier, namely, where'd it go? Dadgummit. By the way, I miscalculated. We should say that instead of 1,500, we're down to 1,350. Thank you. But anyway, John in Central PA pointed out that there is a new candidate in the contest for for the Republican nomination for senator in Pennsylvania, Bamistan. And that would be, what John said was, you were right yet again. About a year ago, New Jersey resident and total fucking hack quack Dr. Mehmet Oz spread disinformation about COVID-19 and suggested old folks sacrifice themselves for the economy. You said he was a maggot Republican, and I scoffed it off as lighthearted hyperbole. But nope. Dr. Oz, thanks, Oprah. Really, thanks. How can we thank you enough? Dr. Oz just announced his candidacy for Pennsylvania Senate, vying for the maggot nomination. He calls himself a conservative and brags about how his parents were immigrants and gave him an excellent life and a chance to attend the best schools. He was likely a beneficiary of the New Deal era policies until Republican thugs like him came along and obliterated it. What a despicable man. Did I mention he lives in a mansion in New Jersey? Well, he has to have bought something in Pennsylvania in order to run there. Whether it's a condo in Philly or a townhouse in Camp Hill or some such, he's got to. But yeah, the Dr. Oz, who was a COVID scoffer, and you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, has hustled. Well, let's just think of Dr. Oz as the Gwyneth Paltrow of TV doctors, because I think he sold everything but hustled everything but jade vagina eggs. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Gwyneth Paltrow locked that one down. But he is a darling of the maggot right. And ugh. And he's entered a campaign that has the potential to be almost as ugly as the one shaping up in Ohio. And that is ugly indeed. CNN had the story a couple of days ago. A cardiothoracic surgeon and television personality running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania as a Republican. And he wrote the following, and no lightning bolts came down and took him out or anything. So, you know, further confirmation of the fundamental impotence of the deity. During the pandemic, I learned that when you mix politics and medicine, you get politics instead of solutions. And that's why I'm running for the U.S. Senate, to help fix the problems and to help us heal. Oh, stay home. He's running against Jeff Bartos and Carla Sands. Jeff Bartos is a Philadelphia area businessman and ran for lieutenant governor in 2018, lost. And Carla Sands was the U.S. ambassador to Denmark in the Maggot administration. David McCormick, a former Treasury Department official under President George W. Bush, remains a potential Republican candidate. And this is all because Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania just said, fuck it. I may be a Republican, but I can't take no more of this, and I'm gonna go and spend more time with my family. And so, with that in mind, there's blood in the water, and I guess Dr. Mehmet Oz smelt it. You have to wonder how the maggots will take to a man of obvious Muslim heritage running for office as a Republican. Maybe they'll feel about him the way they felt about what did Nitwit Nero call him? Sleepy. Before he was calling Joe Biden sleepy, he was calling Ben Carson sleepy. But I don't think Mehmet Oz has any paintings in his house of him walking, holding hands with Jesus on the beach. So given the fact that there's a tremendous, roiling, boiling, Islamophobia problem in the maggot party. Well, yeah. But interestingly, Dr. Oz, I would not trust him to put a Band-Aid on a corpse. He'd probably hurt somebody. Dr. Mehmet Oz was born in Ohio. And he went to medical school at the University of Pennsylvania. And as the article at CNN puts it, he rose to fame as a frequent guest of Oprah and launched his own syndicated daytime TV talk show back 12 years ago in 2009. Yeah. And has been dispensing quack medical advice ever since. But the big thing is that in 2018, Nitwit Nero appointed Dr. Oz to the Presidential Council on Sports, and that brought him to the attention of the MAGOT faithful. But the tell in his campaign announcement video, the tell was when he said that Washington got it wrong on the response to COVID-19. Of course, as John pointed out, he didn't exactly get it right in his own on his own. No. He went on to say, Washington took away our freedom without making us safer. Excuse the out of me? What? Nobody's freedom got taken away. Too much. Too much. Show me these people lacking freedom. You mean, for a time, they couldn't bark and grunt and hoot and smolic and grabulate and rub up butthole to belly button all over themselves and it just make the disease 10 times, 1,000 times, 100, whatever, worse than it already is? Okay, thank you. Ralph's serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. It says that he has a nominally Pennsylvania address. HuffPost reporting, Dr. Oz sort of has an address in the state where he's running for Senate. Home is where the heart is, or where you can rent your in-law's place. Yeah. He says he lives in Philadelphia, or lived there while he was getting his medical and business degrees. And he said, I grew up just across the border, south of Philadelphia. Well, that's not the same thing as being born in Pennsylvania. And he kept talking about where he used to live. I came home a year ago. It feels good to be back. I love the state, and I will represent it honorably. His longtime family residence is in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, HuffPost reports. And he registered to vote absentee in Philadelphia this year, however, at his in-law's home in Montgomery County, PA. And according to what he told the Philadelphia Inquirer, that's where he lives now. This caused Representative Bill Pascrell Jr. of New Jersey to tweet, tongue deeply planted in cheek, I want to congratulate my North Jersey constituent, Dr. Oz, on his run for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. I'm sure this fully genuine candidacy will capture the hearts of Pennsylvanians. I can't think of anybody. Well, I can think of a lot of people that have no business in the United States Senate. But he's way up on the list. A TV patent medicine pitch man. Jesus. Yeah, I don't know. I hope all those maggots and Republicans beat the living piss out of each other. and then make it nice and easy for Pennsylvania's current lieutenant governor to just swan in and become a Democratic senator from PA. You know, that, and again, just to go back to my running thesis, that is the best way to not have to listen to anything that Joe Manchin has to say ever again. Make Joe Manchin irrelevant. Put a Democrat in Pat Toomey's place. Put a Democrat in office in place of murderous dictator pal coddling Mario Rubio in Florida. That's two. So that would be that would negate Sinema and Manchin. And then maybe you pick one up in Ohio, where Tim Ryan would make a far better senator than any of the goons that are running there, up to and including J.D. Vance, whose campaign seems to be imploding a little bit. Somehow or another, the hillbilly elegist doesn't maybe quite fully understand just what's involved in a heated Senate primary campaign. So you get you hang on to everybody we got, and that means Reverend Warnock in Georgia and Mark Kelly in Arizona, among others. And then you replace Rubio and replace Toomey, and suddenly it's 52-48 in the Senate. Maybe Tim Ryan in Ohio, and it's 53-47. And add one or two more, and the next thing you know, the entire United States of America can look at Joe Manchin and say, oh, for Christ's sakes, put a sock in it. And wouldn't that, I mean, isn't that a dream worth daring to have? Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? What does Senator Manchin think? Who gives a fuck? He can sit back there and twiddle his thumbs and count his coal barren profits, and no one has to give a damn. Yeah. Oz voting absentee, Steve in New York, says voter fraud. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, he probably had to vote absentee in Philadelphia because he was going to be in wherever it is that he shoots his dodgy, skeevy, patent medicine show. Yeah. So we got that to talk about, if you would care to talk. In that, you know, it's one of those situations where in that primary contest in Pennsylvania, gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Yeah. A couple of stories caught my eye earlier today. CNBC had a story pointing out something that we already knew, confirmed by our conversation last night with Paul from Parts Unknown, whose story just continues to move and touch my heart, by the way. If you didn't catch last night's program, go back and listen to the story that Paul tells. It's one of the most beautiful accounts of anything that I've heard on here in a while. It was really uplifting. CNBC reporting today, Omicron COVID variant likely circulating for longer and more widely than thought, experts say. So yeah, it's been here for a while, and it's just that we didn't really notice it. It behaved bizarrely enough that scientists in South Africa began testing and trying to look and see what, and of course, then it became the South African variant, and that meant that the scientists had to run out there lickety-split and give it a nice little Greek letter before the maggots could get their full racism on. And so it became Omicron. At least 24 countries, CNBC reports, at least 24 countries have now reported cases of Omicron, And the World Health Organization said, well, that number is going to keep going up. And more tellingly, perhaps, there are increasing signs of what we know. This is one of those phrases we had to learn early on and continues to be relevant. There are more cases of what appear to be community transmission of the Omicron variant, which means that it's transmission from people who, how about that, had no connection whatsoever to South Africa or Southern Africa, hadn't traveled there, hadn't thought about being there, nothing. And so it's reasonable to think that it's been running around Canada, it's been running around California. Hell, for all we know, it's probably all over those COVID crockpots like Alabama and Mississippi and, sadly, West Virginia. At least 23 countries, according to the World Health Organization, from 5 of the 6 World Health Organization regions, have reported cases of the Omicron variant, quote, and we expect that number to grow. We became 24 yesterday. A fully vaccinated person in California showed up. Then it was identified a second time in Minnesota. And that person developed symptoms after coming back from where? New York City. He was at a convention between November the 19th and 21st in New York. He, too, was fully vaccinated. And here's the tell on that. The fully vaccinated people got it, but they recovered and recovered quickly. So other countries with the Omicron that have said it out loud, the UK, France, Israel, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, Italy, Sweden, Denmark, Australia, Canada, Hong Kong, and several countries in the southern portion of the African continent. And it will go around the globe before science can get its shoes on. So we have that. The South African government is arguably justifiably pissed that travel from South Africa was shut down, noting that they were being punished for discovering something, not creating it. It was November 24th when South Africa reported it to the World Health Organization. That means that it had probably been running around for a couple of weeks, at least. The first sample that was taken that developed Omicron was November the 9th. But as CNBC reports, there are now increasing signs that the variant was in circulation in other countries before South Africa's health authorities alerted the world to its presence. There are a growing number of cases being discovered with no travel connection to the region, suggesting community transmission is taking place. 9 cases in Scotland and the UK traced back to a single private event held on November 20th, and none of those people have any connection whatsoever to travel to South Africa. And between November 19th and 23rd, two samples were taken in the Netherlands that showed up with Omicron. And of course, that predates travel from anything, the announcement in South Africa. The Netherlands have 14 confirmed cases. And in Leipzig, in Germany, they have an Omicron case. That guy has not been abroad. He hasn't had contact with anyone who's been abroad, because at least these countries can and do contact trace, and the barking, grunting idiots out there, they're taking away my freedom, they're watching my movements. See, that's what happens when you get the vaccine. You get that little tiny liquid barcode microchip transmitter that Bill Gates is just sitting there watching from his man in the high tower. The whole thing came out as a result of one doctor observing what she called unusual symptoms that were slightly different from the Delta variant. And in Botswana, they started noticing it as a result of illnesses around November the 7th. And they said it came from a diplomatic mission to a foreign country, but Botswana did not identify the foreign country. So, further proof that we need to be vaccinated and boosted, and hopefully, get this thing under control? No, because there are way, way too many stupid people in the United States of America. You know, morons. Checking in over at Herman Cain Award. Family of three gets COVID. Son and dad are in hospital. Also, Joe Biden is an actor, and they're sending witches into hospital to take out Christians. Oh, there goes the 426 through Birmingham. Son on a ventilator. Father up and moving. COVID from hell. Literally, it's from hell. The Lord showed me and my prayer warriors. They were so busy they couldn't stop the shooting in Michigan, I guess. That some nurses, witches, have been sent there to take out Christians. No joke. It's real, folks. Check in on who is taking care of your loved ones. They need to be in there. They need to be their advocate, along with angels of protection. And I thought COVID brain only affected the people who got COVID. Yet no. Witches, nurse witches. Right. Yeah. Oh, there's tons of these every day. Texas woman believed the COVID vaccines weren't actual vaccines. She leaves behind four kids, nine grandkids, and a grieving husband. Air Force colonel claims she was fired for not ordering subordinates to get COVID vaccine. God. Yeah, there's no dearth of these idiots. And to read Herman Cain Award over at Reddit, it's a really nihilistic kind of heartbreaking experience. So many people killing themselves. Here's one, tough guy, family man. He was only 39, posting things like, a warrior knows he could die in battle. He just doesn't expect the arrows to be from his own government. And then the classically transphobic, sickening, I identify as vaccinated. And then there's this one, and it just kind of baffles me. Well, I mean, that's what the thing says. It baffles me that the entire country does not question this. Flu cases plummet during pandemic. 1,822 cases of flu, 2020-21 flu season. 38 million in the cases of during the 2019-2020 flu season. Why are people not questioning this? Well, because we did have some substantial mask wearing. Everybody wasn't a COVIDiot. And oddly enough, masks hinder the spread of viral disease. But dude couldn't quite understand. And so, as Jesse Lee Peterson would put it, this 39-year-old picture of health.
He did.
It's a damn tragedy. Just a freaking tragedy. Sorry to just jump out here on this thorn in the side Thursday with such happy freaking news. Maybe it's a function of how well I don't feel. But since yesterday was prayer meeting Wednesday and we didn't have any prayer meeting, another little story worth the telling. This is the story of William Neal Doc Gallagher. And he called himself the Money Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And from the BBC story, they quote from his inspirational introductory video that says, Dr. Neal Gallagher is a premier true American with integrity in all his pursuits. His life's passion is to help people retire safe, early, and happy. Well, the only one really doing that was, as it turns out, Dr. Gallagher. And Doc Gallagher, the money doctor, ran his program heavily. Where? Yeah, of course, Christian radio. And it turns out that he wasn't an investment counselor at all. He was running a Ponzi scheme. And so he's, while he described himself as having a visionary style and said that he'd guided more than 1,000 people to financial independence through his firm, and while he wrote a book called Jesus Christ, Moneymaker. Well, Jesus was a moneymaker for Doc Gallagher, but people lost their shirts on his Ponzi scheme. He scrounged up $32 million, and his victims were retirees between the ages of 62 and 91. He soaked $500,000 out of a retired septuagenarian who was fighting lymphoma, and he's been doing it since 2013. Well, he busted. He's been taken down and charged, and hopefully we'll never see the outside of a jail. We'll spend, in fact, the rest of his life in one. But he himself is an octogenarian, and so, you know, the court will probably be merciful to him. Good God, Jesus Christ, Moneymaker. That's worse than Jesus Christ, Superstar. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission ordered his Gallagher Financial Group, Inc. and W. Neal Gallagher PhD agency shuttered back in March, but last month, November, he got three life sentences in prison from a judge in Texas's Tarrant County. Now, will they let him serve it on house arrest? We don't know that. He'd already been handed a 25-year sentence in Dallas in March of 2020. And, of course, when the BBC reached out to his lawyer offered no comment. Yeah. But the kicker here is where he found his victims. Especially when you're in the Deep South, as I am now, you hit the scan button on the AM dial, and you're going to get a hell of a lot more Christian radio hits on your scan than even, you know, the ubiquitous Spanish language broadcasting, or, of course, right-wing hate radio political broadcasting. I guess there are some 20 million listeners per week to Christian radio. And he had the money, and he was paying to place his program on as many Christian radio stations as he could stand to do. And as it says in our offertory hymn each week, I'll have it again when I get back home, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah. Right? One individual, a Tarrant County District Attorney, head of the Elder Financial Fraud Team, Lori Varnell, she said, within the Christian community, there's a high level of trust, especially here in the Bible Belt. Once you start speaking the Christian language and using their words, their phrases, that'll be a telltale sign to other Christians that you're a Christian. So it's like, I don't know, like knowing the lodge handshake. Ugh. Ms. Varnell said that having established a trust relationship by using the magic words, people were less likely to pay as much attention to the details. And the next thing you know, old Christian Doc Gallagher, author of the pithy tome, Jesus Christ Moneymaker. Jesus Christ Moneymaker. Well, at least it's not Jesus Christ Shakes His Moneymaker. Well, there's a term for it. It's called affinity fraud. And people get taken in because they, schemer, in this case, Doc Gallagher, gets close to them and then extends his tentacles, and there goes the retirement fund. Yeah. So that's, you know, some of the stuff for today. Steve in New York with a note, and addressing it to Billable Rick. Billable Rick said, and I'll get to Steve's note in a second. Billable Rick said, oral argument yesterday in the Supreme Court of Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban, based on the apparent acceptance of the conservative Supreme Court majority that there is no constitutional right to an abortion and that abortion may be altogether banned by a legislative body as voiced by Amy Covett Barrett, Justice Handmaid, and Brett I Like Beer Kavanaugh, Brat, in the oral argument last Friday, the conservatives have unmoored Roe v. Wade from its constitutional underpinnings, which is the right to bodily privacy under the 4th and 14th Amendments. Thus, as you have long posited, Billable says, the real target of the Catholic fascist Supreme Court is the 1965 decision in Griswold versus Connecticut, which protects the liberty of married couples to buy and use contraceptives without governmental restriction, which is also based on the right to privacy. My advice to Horn family members is to buy stock in Trojan and to stock up on rubbers while you can still buy them. As usual, you're so far ahead of the curve that the road in front of you is a straight line, or to borrow some lyrics from the McCartney song, The World Tonight. I don't know what you want to be. I go back so far, he's in front of me. I can see the future. I can see the world tonight. Ooh, I need to check that out. But anyway, thank you for that, Billable. And Steve in New York said, hey, Billable, here's my $25 Hey Iowa beat the ever-living shit out of Teton this Saturday, that team up north, and smack Coach Khaki Pants' ass, $25, because they'll beat them by 15, overcoming the 10.5-point spread. Go Hawkeyes, make Harbaugh choke again. It's kind of hard to pronounce, but so that challenge is on the table, and that would get us down to 1,300 bucks to get all the way caught up to this day. So thank you, Billable, and thank you, Steve, in New York, for the challenge. I don't know if you want to accept that challenge or not, Billable. Meanwhile, Randy in PA says, uninformed people are still calling the variant Omicron, and It baffles me, but the only thing I can come up with as an answer is that people are more familiar with the idea and the word, the Latin word omni, which means all, than they are with the Greek letter omicron. And so they can't help hearing omni when they hear om. Good God, what do they do with umami? You know what? I went to that there Japanese restaurant and it had some of that omni mommy seasoning to it, and I tell you, it was something special. I could really taste the omni mommy in that one fake crab roll that I had there. Yeah, I think it was maybe in the Wahhabi sauce what they give me. I'll be quite candid. I don't know how far I'm going to make it this evening because I'm really uncomfortable this evening. Sorry. It's just one of those things that comes and goes. There's some good news coming out of Georgia. Ralph shared this with me. Democrats flipped at least 7 local races across Georgia last night, including in Warner Robins, Georgia, where voters elected the first woman and first black mayor to lead the city. And Warner Robins, Georgia, LaRonda Patrick ousted incumbent mayor Randy Toms, becoming the first woman and first black person to lead that city. Democrats also beat Republican challengers in mayoral races in Brunswick. Aha! We were talking about Brunswick relative to the McMichael murder case, in which they slaughtered young Ahmaud Arbery. Mayoral races in Brunswick, Forest Park, and Sylvester, Georgia. They picked up city council seats in 5 cities like Albany and Duluth. And during this election cycle, they've also flipped mayoral offices in Cairo, Stone Mountain, Hampton, and McDonough, Georgia. And dozens of city council seats will flip throughout the state, or that were flipped throughout the state earlier this month. Stacey Abrams has built something in Georgia. And with Brian Kemp not there to personally oversee the voter suppression that allowed him to beat Stacey Abrams in the first place, well, things, if she builds that machine and Georgia can protect Senator Warnock, it'll be a good sign. It'll be a hopeful thing. And like I said, these are all key puzzle pieces toward America being able to tell Joe Manchin to sit down and shut the fuck up. A day well worth dreaming of. Speaking of Stacey Abrams, here is her campaign announcement. Unpaid product placement.
I've worked a lot of jobs in my life.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
And for the past 4 years,
thank you for our daily bread.
When the hardest times hit us all, I've worked to do my part to help families make it through.
There you go.
Paying off medical debt for 68,000 Georgians. Expanding access to vaccines. Bringing supplies to overwhelmed food banks. Lending a hand across our state, especially in rural Georgia. We help finance small businesses trying to stay afloat. And I spoke up for families being left behind. While my jobs have changed, what I know to be true has not. Our values are still strong. No matter where we come from in Georgia or how long we've been here, we believe in this place and our people. Folks who deserve to be seen and heard and have a voice. Because in the end, we are one Georgia. Regardless of the pandemic or the storms, the obstacles in our way or the forces determined to divide us. My job has been to put my head down and keep working toward one Georgia. For that farmer in Peach County, the teacher in Sparta, the mechanic in College Park, for our next generation who should have more than we can imagine. Because opportunity and success in Georgia shouldn't be determined by your zip code, background, or access to power. But if our Georgia is going to move to its next and greatest chapter, we're going to need leadership.
I think you'd make a really good governor. All you gotta do is stay tough and stay brave.
Thank you.
Leadership that knows how to do the job. Leadership that doesn't take credit without also taking responsibility. Leadership that understands the true pain folks are feeling and has real plans. That's the job of governor, to fight for one Georgia, our Georgia. And now it's time to get the job done.
It closes with a website, of course. Join us, Stacey Abrams, ABRAMS.com. And it really does sound like she knows what the hell she's doing, doesn't it? And whatever creature, whatever maggot the Republican Party in Georgia puts up to go against her is going to have a formidable opponent who will be able to talk past and talk and deconstruct all the barking, grunting, hooting, maggot talking points. With a note, Steve in New York says, this will be our first woman president, Stacey Abrams. But let's not get the cart too far out in front of the horse. She needs to be governor of Georgia first. And given Georgia's voter suppression law, I think she knows what a tall order that is. And by the way, Billable Rick responding, Steve's Go Hawkeyes challenge. I'll match Steve's challenge of $25 for the Hawkeyes to beat TTUN Saturday. FYI, I'm having trouble accessing PayPal on the Horn website. I may have to. You can just go to PayPal regularly, Billable. And you can bypass the interface there at headon.live. If you just go to PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com, because that's what's still tied to it, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and then select sending money to friends and family, there's no fees or anything, no transfer fees, at least that I'm aware of, and it comes through just the same. So the interface is not the only way. I don't know if others are having trouble with the PayPal interface or not, but thank you for that, Billable. So there we are, down to $1,300 to go to come up even with where we now stand. That's basically $200 remaining for today, and and Steve in New York says also, I've had some really squirrely shit with PayPal the last few days. I haven't seen any of it, but everything's kind of weird. God, I wish my energy level was better. But there's some good news out there. Remember, what was her name? Squidney. Squidney Powell. And then there's Lynn Wood. Squidney and Lynn got a piece of correspondence from a federal judge in Michigan today. And that federal judge ordered Squidney Powell and Lynn Wood to pay over $175,000 in sanctions because of the completely bogus bullshit barking mad conspiracy theory of a lawsuit that they filed trying to overturn the results in Michigan in 2020. U.S. District Judge Linda V. Parker wrote, "This lawsuit represents a historic and profound abuse of the judicial process." That was back in August when she initially approved sanctions. She took a bit of a blue pen to the numbers that were presented by the cities that were put out by the stupidity of this lawsuit. She has ordered these two goofballs to pay legal costs that were incurred by Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, the city of Detroit. And her lawsuit, you'll recall, said that an international cabal stole the election from Nitwit Nero. And Detroit asked for $182,192 when they submitted their bills. Judge Parker lowered that amount to $153,285.62. That's the closest thing that Squidney Powell can come up with for a win. Nitwit Nero's lawyers didn't challenge the $21,964.75 that Benson and Whitmer submitted for their legal bills. And so it comes to a grand total of $175,250.37. And the judge was having no sympathy whatsoever. She said, you know, the lawyers have sought donations from the public to fund lawsuits like this, so they have the ability to pay this sanction. It wasn't just Squidney Powell and Lillian Wood, though. There were more pettifoggers. And that includes Howard Kleinhandler, Gregory Roll, Stephanie Lynn Gentilla, Emily Newman, Julia Haller, Brandon Johnson, and Scott Hagerstrom. But here's the fun part. The judge made sure that these damages are joint and several. The joint and several liability attaches to all of these freaks, so the plaintiffs can go and get the whole nut from, say, Squidney Powell or Lillian Wood, and then leave Squidney and Lillian to fight it out among the other maggot lawyers, which should make it it's another one of those situations where you say, "Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little." The full opinion is available online. And the thing is that it's a matter of something that should have been used far more often and with regard to all of these slimy conspiracy theory lawsuits. These are Rule 11 sanctions under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And she relied on the interpretation of the rule. Analyze the monies expended defending and on the appeal. Analyze the way that the city and the governor and the attorney general had calculated their billing. And then at the end said, "Pay up, motherfucker." And hopefully this is only the beginning. Hopefully the money involved here will lead to eventual disbarment for these clowns. Judge Parker was thorough to say the least. So good. I like a little good news here and there. She noted, in this litigation, plaintiff's attorneys scorned their oath, flouted the rules, and attempted to undermine the integrity of the judiciary along the way. And even after the court issued a decision finding plaintiff's claims barred under multiple legal theories, their counsel, quote, brazenly asserted they would file the same complaints again. Plaintiff's attorneys made this assertion even after witnessing the events of January 6th and the dangers posed by narratives like the one counsel crafted here. The court found sanctions necessary to deter such dangerous behavior in the future. So there will probably be an appeal because Judge Parker said it is further ordered that if any party appeals this opinion into order or the court's August 25th, 2021 decision, the obligation to pay the above sanctions is stayed pending resolution of all appeals. So nobody has to write the check yet. And you see how this game will be played. It will go up to, I think, I'm not sure which circuit handles the state of Michigan. And from there, it'll go, LaLinwood and Squidney Powell hope to get it to the Supreme Court, where they hope that the six maggots there will overturn the necessity for them to write the checks. Beautiful, isn't it? Everything hinges on the Supreme Court being wholly, completely, and utterly corrupt. Oh, but just to put a little cap on things, at least we got an hour of broadcasting in this evening. Oh, let me check the email real quick. As to joint and several liability, Steve in New York says, let that really big bag of rats fight to the, not hurting too little. Yeah, this is one of those moments where you go to the Princess Bride and you say, oh no, not to the death. To the pain. Thank you to Christopher. Christopher jumping in and helping out, saying, feel better, Robin. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'm trying. Billable. I do have Venmo. My PayPal access, Billable says, for reasons unknown, has been suspended. Here, let me find the Venmo address real quick, and I can give you that. In fact, that's how Christopher jumped in just now, as a matter of fact. It's at Bob, B-O-B, hyphen, Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, hyphen, 1. At Bob Kincaid, 1. And when you look it up, you'll see my smiling face in the photo there. So thank you, Billable. Much appreciated. And if anybody else is having PayPal problems, you can use that too. Venmo. And again, thank you, Christopher, and I'm trying to feel better. We had that on the show, Ron and Raleigh. An AstroTurf mothers group in Tennessee has petitioned to have books about Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. removed from the school curriculum, as well as the book Ruby Bridges Goes to School. Funny thing is, they're using the only, quote, white people know from MLK Jr. as a cudgel to have the books removed. The group said that showing black folks attacked by dogs and sprayed with fire hoses was just too traumatic for children to be exposed to. I have a bad feeling that Senator Warnock's election is too close to the bullshit CRT story Republicans are telling. I understand, and Georgia will do everything in its power to make sure that a lot of the people who went out and voted for Senator Warnock aren't able to do it twice, no matter how legal it is for them to vote and how much their constitutional right. Yeah, I saw that. And of course, the moms in Tennessee got shot down as to their complaint because it had to do with something last year. And the Tennessee Department of Education can only act on complaints in the current school year. But that is cold comfort, to say the least. But like I said, we need a giggle. And so let me introduce you to Justin Jersey of Flint, Michigan. He became famous in the days after the January 6th insurrection, the assault on the Constitution of the United States and the seat of constitutional governance in the United States. He became known as hashtag Finger Man. He attacked Capitol Police while he was wearing a University of Michigan sweatshirt. Funny how this sort of plays in. You know, in many ways, it's a lot up there is a lot like down here. There's a whole bunch of people running around with university clothing who have never been anywhere, never even been within driving distance of the university itself. I mean, a University of Alabama sweatshirt down here is absolutely good enough to wear to church on Sunday. And there are parts of Michigan where there are, I'm sure the same is true of a UM sweatshirt. He was photographed and it caught a picture of his middle finger, which has a tattoo on it, because you just got to take a moment and ponder the process that leads you to walk in and get this done. He has a tattoo on his middle finger that says, "Fuck you." Generally, the use of said middle finger is pretty much enough to get that job done without having to put it there. I don't know. Maybe he wanted it there for... Oh, I don't know. He got it on his left middle finger, and it showed up in pictures of him from the insurrection. And the Huffington Post's Ryan Riley reported that Justin Jersey was friends with another Capitol riot defendant, Trevor Brown. And here's the fun part, because the goddess of irony never sleeps. Jersey's girlfriend publicly tagged the two men in a post about January 6th on Facebook. Online sleuths then found an Instagram image of Jersey that showed what appeared to be a fuck you tattoo on his left middle finger, which can also be spotted in images of him swinging a stick at Capitol Police officers, erasing any doubt about the identification. Ryan Riley in the Post said also, "Tattoos are the unsung heroes of the January 6th probe, probably followed closely by freckles and moles." I don't know. Freckles and moles kind of sounds like the law firm that would be defending these insurrectionist maggots. Thank you for calling Freckles and Moles. How may I help? And Justin Jersey made a brief appearance in federal court today. He's being held without bond pending transfer to the federal court in Washington, D.C. The charges he faces carry potential imprisonment of up to 20 years in the federal stir. I'm sure that Merrick Garland's Federalist Society federal prosecutors will ask for 15.37 seconds of jail time and a $500 fine. Hopefully, maybe Judge Beryl Howell or Amy Berman Jackson will get hold of the case and at least give Fuck You Finger Man a few days of prison time. Oh, yeah. He's right there, him and his stick. What a winner. Well, once again, it's another case of I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Tom, in sunny San Rafael, says, "Finger Man." Where's my cowbell? "The tattoo is so he can remember which The tattoo is so he can remember which finger to use.
Oh, I needed that, Tom. Thank you.
Which one? Oh, there. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and fuck you.
Oh, God, that's good.
I never can remember. Is it that? Not? Oh, here's one. Yeah, fuck you. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Steve. I'm going to do exactly that. Jeremy in Vermont, subject line, COVID flu shots update. Fuck you. Oh, that's the right finger. Left finger's the right finger. Jeremy says, COVID flu shots update. I was fine till I went to bed, then I had the shivers and felt very cold. Woke up this afternoon to 101.1 temperature. It would appear the vaccines are doing what they're supposed to do, get my body to react and fight them off. Drink lots of fluid. I cannot, and I know this is the kind of folk wisdom that the anti-vaxxers are, but I cannot recommend highly enough drinking a lot of Gatorade with vaccines. It's really weird. It's not just me, a couple of other people. You drink a quart of Gatorade before you get the shot and keep drinking Gatorade after. And for some reason or another, it seems to ameliorate some of the symptoms. So I hope somebody can get you some Gatorade, Jeremy. It might make you feel a little bit better. And so, having been advised by more than one person to go ahead and knock off, I'm gonna. We got an hour in. Sorry my energy level wasn't as good as it should be. But I'm just exhausted. And we're going to have those days. But slowly but surely, I will build my strength back up. And we'll get, you know, last night did almost 3 hours. So that wasn't shabby. Finger Man has garnered some attention. I need to share this as well. Matt in San Francisco. If he tattooed that on his finger, I wonder if he has the same tattoo on his penis. Wait, which one? What? No, because if he did, then he'd be waving his schmeckle trying to insult people, and that probably would have resulted in arrest long before now. I mean, that's my guess. that's my guess, Matt. But it's a worthwhile inquiry. God. And then there's the question of no, we're just not going to go there. We're going to keep the program out of the gutter as much as possible this evening. Okay. So that's it for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I will hopefully be far more energetic for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. And I can't believe it's already Thursday. It is already Thursday, right? Yeah, it's the second day of December. So thank you so much, and back tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch, and I'm hoping we will have a merry time indeed. And in the meantime, please stay safe. And thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thanks so very kindly. To Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you. That gets us down like 1290 and change. I know you did that just for the, I don't know, maybe you were testing the interface. But anyway, thank you, Brother Deacon. Thanks. And thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you so much to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve when they're in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, manager of the stream and the website. Thanks for being here this evening, Sparky, sincerely. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Please get your shots. Please keep washing your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your gloves. Use hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance. And for God's sakes, if you should happen to see somebody out there wandering along, staring quizzically at their two middle fingers, look at, oh, this one, that says fuck you. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.